way, let's get started. I should note today is June 11th or 12th? 12th. 11th. Okay, today is June 11th. So I think what we're going to do is continue the 18th and the 25th and then pause there. Not that anybody's going anywhere for the summer, but I need some time just to prepare things for next year. So, yeah, sorry, Susan. So, yeah. Yes. Oh, and TK's on now, so Mazel Tov. I can give you a sort of in-person Mazel Tov.
What's a Mazel Tov?
You gotta unmute.
What's a Mazel Tov? My daughter got engaged.
Okay. Okay. All right.
I did not get your email.
Yes. So you just missed the opening comment. Those who have simpatico email addresses, my emails can't get through. So I need to use a different one for you. If you could email me a different... I know you have another one. If you just email me the other one. Yeah, right now it's recording, so I'm not really going to recommend that you put it on the recording. Okay, thanks. But yeah, that's the... there you go. Exhibit A of our simpatico problem. All right. So we are in Perek Tet Zayin, chapter 16, getting towards the end of the chapter. Last week, we saw the tragedy of Shaul's illness. Ricky wrote a note in the chat. Oh, Rabbi, can you see me? No, nope, I cannot. Your video is off as of now. Again, back to where we were. We learned last week about the tragedy of Shaul's illness, and it actually figured into a shiur that I gave last night on Parshas Baaloscha, so maybe I'll give a 2-minute on that as well. Moshe appoints assistants / replacements 3 times in the Chumash. I'm not counting Yehoshua and Aharon and Hur when Moshe goes up for the Egel. Well, goes up Har Sinai and then the Egel happens. But first of all, when he appoints the Shoftim, the judges in Parshas Yisro, then a second time when he appoints the Zekanim, the elders, in our Parsha Baaloscha, and then a third time in Parshas Pinchas when he's told to appoint Yehoshua to replace him. But the first time round in Parshas Yisro, there's no impact on Moshe. It's appoint them, and he appoints them, and that's it. Whereas if you look in our Parsha, Hashem says, "V'atzalti min haruach asher alecha v'samti aleihem," I am going to take from the spirit that I put on you and give it to them. I'm going to keep something from you and assign it to your Zekanim. And in fact, that's what sounds like it happens. It says, "Vayotzel min haruach asher alav," he kept from that which was on Moshe. "Vayitein al shivimish hazakenim," and instead he gave it to the elders. And then the third time, when he appoints Yehoshua, we're told, "Venasata mehodcha alav," you shall give of your hod, of your splendor, your glory, give it to Yehoshua. And also, "Vesamachta asyadcha alav," lean your hands on Yehoshua. So, the question that I was trying to address in this Parsha Shir, maybe afterwards I'll send out the link to the recording of it so that you can get the full Shir, at least those of you who don't use Simpatico. The question that I was trying to address was, why is it that something has to be taken from Moshe to be given to the Zekanim? It didn't have to happen with the Shoftim. Why does it have to happen with the Zekanim? And I complicated matters by bringing a medrash which actually says that Hashem, it appears, was criticizing Moshe. That Hashem said, "I hired you to take care of everybody. I gave you this special ruach such that you should be able to take care of everybody. Now you want to outsource the job? You want other people in on it also? That's fine. But you're paying them. I'm not the one to pay them. You have to pay them from your ruach." That's the way the Medrash words it. It compares it to the owner of an orchard who says that he hires somebody to guard the orchard. The guardian of the orchard comes back to him and says, "I can't do this myself." And he says, "Fine, go hire people. But it's not coming out of my dime, it's coming out of your dime. That's what Hashem says to Moshe. However, the Medrash then continues to say that afterwards, Hashem decided not to take anything away from Moshe. Hashem said, no, you know what, Moshe? You're able to keep it. You don't have to give anything away. Why? Because when Moshe, in the end, makes Yehoshua his replacement, it says that Yehoshua was malei ruach chokhmah, full of ruach, of wisdom, and he can't have been full if Moshe had given any away to the Zakenim. Can't be that Yeshua would have been full. Must be that Moshe didn't lose anything after all. So this Medrash is extremely problematic. Because now I don't understand at all. Why did you have to take it away from Moshe in the first place to give it to the Zakenim? If you're going to tell me that it's because there's some kind of law of conservation of Ruach, and therefore Moshe can't have and the Zakenim have, then how was Hashem able to decide in the end, you know what, Moshe, I'm not taking it away from you. You can retain it. Not to mention, I don't understand why Moshe being full equals Yehoshua being full. The whole thing is very difficult to understand. So, in brief, I gave three ideas. The first idea that I gave was, this is supported by the Chizkuni, was that it was a punishment. Diane just said what I said in the chat. The first idea is that it's a punishment. In other words, it's not that Moshe has to lose something in order for Yehoshua to gain, but like the Medrash said, Hashem says, this was wrong for you to make this request. The problem I have with that idea is, first of all, if you need help, you need help. I don't believe that Moshe gives up until he has to. That's just not consistent with who we find in the Torah. If Moshe needed to have somebody else help him, then he's not wrong for asking for it, number one. And number two, what made Hashem then change his mind? Why does Hashem then decide, you know, Moshe, you actually can keep it. What does that even mean? What's that all about? The punishment idea fits with what happens in our parak to Shaul and David. It's a punishment. I'm taking away the ruach from Shaul and giving it to David. That part of it I would understand. The second approach that I gave was an approach from Ramban, which ignores this medrash. Ramban says it's about chain of command. Hashem speaks to the one who has the ruach, and then that one who has the ruach is the one who gives instructions to everybody else. If you introduce Zakenim, these elders, and they also have access to the ruach, then you create confusion. Who is in charge? Who is the one who's receiving from Hashem? You need a chain of command. As the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, Dabar echad lador, ve'ein shnei dabarin lador. There's one leader at a time. You can't have multiple. So what Hashem did was Hashem said to Moshe, you are going to... Ricky, no, the answer is no. Hashem said to Moshe, you're going to receive Ruach from me, and then from you, Ruach is going to go to the Zakenim, in order that they should understand that you're in charge. But nothing is taken away from Moshe, as Ramban reads it. He's ignoring this Medrash. Moshe didn't lose anything at all. It's simply that the prophecy that the Zakenim have comes via Moshe. They don't have access to anything that Moshe does not give them. That's the way that the Ramban takes it. I see your hand, Claudette, but I'm just want to go through this quickly. It's not really about Shmuel. It's more about the Parsha, but I think it gives us insight into what's going on in Shmuel. And then the third approach that I brought, I think has a lot to recommend it, and again, affects our understanding of Shaul and David, and that is that it was a matter of exclusivity. Meaning, Hashem always wants the relationship that is closest to him to be exclusive. It's not shared. If you think of the way he relates to Bnei Yisrael, right? The relationship Hashem has with us over and over again, he emphasizes, is an exclusive relationship. It doesn't go to everybody else. I gave a whole bunch of examples of this, where Moshe said, "V'niflinu ani v'amcha," we have to be unique and different. Mind you, anybody can join if they accept the Torah. People are still able to join this nation. Nonetheless, this nation of those who receive the Torah will have a relationship with Hashem that others do not. And the same thing is true for the person who's going to be the one who is the melech, the one who is the leader. Moshe is unique. And nobody else can have a Moshe relationship. And if Moshe is going to open that up by inviting in Zakenim, it's not a punishment for him, but necessarily that degrades his relationship with Hashem. Once you invite in others, you're not at that top level, that exclusive level anymore, and Hashem says, therefore I'm going to drop you down. To have that kind of proximity to Hashem requires that it be an exclusive relationship. I talked a lot about it in that shiur. After the shiur, God willing, I'll send out a link, and then you'll be able to hear the whole thing. But the point with Shaul and David is, we asked last time, and now I'll come to Claudette's question, and I see Ruth unmuted, so I imagine you also have a question. But the Shaul David dynamic and the idea that Shaul is going to lose this Ruach and the Ruach is now going to go to David could be understood in any of those three approaches. Number one, if it's a punishment, right, which we saw last week, some of the commentators indeed said. Number two, if it's an issue of chain of command. If you want David to take over, you have to take it away from Shaul, otherwise it creates confusion. Or, if it's the issue of exclusivity, if you're going to be the melech, you have an exclusive connection to Hashem. Right? If you think about it in the Moshe context, right? Moshe communicates with Hashem separate from everybody else out in the Ohel Moed. He separates from his family. That's also part of the Parsha. The separation that he does from the family. He has to wear the masveh. He has that shield of sorts over his face. The PPE in the Midbar. In order to keep that privacy that's crucial to that exclusive relationship. So all three of those models fit with what happens with Shaul and David. Okay, Claudette and then Ruth.
Rabbi, you answered part of my question when you said that Moshe had a set relationship with God. Even though before he had 7 people to be head, he's already crying out to God, he's talking to God. Shaul didn't do that, you know. The relationship was...
Your audio broke up for the last thing that you said about Shaul being different.
I can't remember any reading that Shaul cries out for the last relationship with God, like most special.
Got it. Okay. I mean, there is something to be said about Shaul's relationship with Hashem. If you go back to the beginning of it, in chapter 10, he actually became a Navi at one point. Like, there's... Shaul's relationship with Hashem is fascinating in its own right. Ruth, you were going to say?
I was going back to Moshe's Canaan, but Moshe was still the only one who had direct contact with Hashem. His Canaan didn't.
Well,
so,
yeah.
Right,
so the Ramban believes that the reason the Zakenim don't have that connection to Hashem is because of the way Hashem did it. Hashem said, your Ruach is going to come from Moshe. You will not have your own. So that it will be through Moshe, but otherwise they would have, in fact, had their own experience of it. And in fact, the Medrash, not like the Ramban, seems to think that they do. And it's a bigger discussion. I just, since it tied into the Parsha so nicely, and it was my shiur last night, and actually there's somebody else who listened to my Shmuel shiur online last week, and emailed me a question, but I didn't have a chance to listen to his question until after I gave that shiur. So hopefully he'll catch that shiur, and he's also listening this week, and therefore he'll get it that way. Okay. Just not on the Zoom. It's a women's Zoom. Okay, we are. Then after Shaul has lost that ruach, and he is now experiencing ruach ra'ah, as we talked about last week, and Shmuel we talked about as well in terms of the tragedy for Shmuel, that he has to be the one to carry this out. That in and of itself is such a it's such a difficult and painful thing to understand what Shmuel must have been experiencing here. But now I want to shift gears. So we are in Perek Hetzayin, chapter 16, and we are up to Pasuk Tetzayin, sentence 16. So it's 16:16, and the treatment for Shaul's situation. What's going to happen here in brief is that Shaul's aides are going to suggest a musician be brought to play for him when he is upset. They're going to find him, David, not known to them to be king, just David. He is wonderful, awesome, successful, everybody's favorite. And Shaul makes him some kind of aid himself. Armor bearer, something along those lines. We'll have to talk about exactly what. So this is going to take us from Pasuk Tetzayin, sentence 16, basically through to the end of the parak. The end of the parak is in sight. We won't finish it this week, but it's in sight. Susan, you were going to say?
I was going to ask you. You're saying all these mamas that David had. And when we go back to when David was out in the field, could there have been jealousy? Like the brothers don't, like Cinderella's story?
Right, so we're going to come back to the question of why they don't bring him forward if he has all these wonderful traits. We discussed it briefly already. We're going to discuss it more down the line next week, but it's not really going to be a topic this week, so keep the thought in mind. Ricky writes in the chat, why was David not kept at home now that he is king? The kings don't get to stay home. But also because, well, it's unclear. And I think it's reasonably unclear how they should view him. Meaning, you're a member of David's family. You are aware that David has been anointed. And again, we had a debate on that. When it said he was anointed among his brethren, did that mean they actually were aware or not, is subject to debate. But let's assume at least Yishai knew that David had been anointed. But you also know that Shaul is sitting on the throne. And that everybody is dealing with Shaul as king. So I don't really know what you do with David at this point. Like, I don't know what to do. What exactly do you do? Do you let everybody know? Keep in mind also, when Shaul became king, he went back to his animals. Now, he also didn't want the throne. Something that never seems to be David's problem. But it's worth considering that Shaul set a precedent. If you become king, go take care of your animals. There's something to be said about that. It sounds like a good piece of advice. I don't know, but yeah, David is going to go back to being a shepherd until he becomes a musician. So let's learn the psukim. Let's see the text itself. Sentence 16: the servants of Shaul have just said that he's frightened by ruach ra'ah, like we talked about. And so now they say, Yomar na Adonenu avadecha lefanecha. Speak up, our master. You should issue a decree. Your servants are here in front of you. We're willing to do your bidding. Yivakshu ish yodea menagein bakinor. Let a person who knows how to play the kinor is some kind of stringed instrument, right? We're familiar with various translations. But somebody who can play the kinnor should be sought. V'haya v'yos alecha ruach elokim ra'ah v'nigein b'yado v'tov lach. Then, when you have this ruach elokim ra'ah, we talked about that phrase already. I'm not going to reopen that discussion, but they think that Hashem is actually frightening him, is the way that Abarbanel read it. So let them go find somebody who plays music. And when you have this spirit in you, well, he'll play music with his hands, v'tov lach, and it will be good for you. I see the question in the chat, but I'm going through the psukim first. Vayomer Shaul al avadav. Shaul said to his servants, Re'una li ish meitiv l'nagein. He said, okay, find me somebody who can play well. V'havi yosem elai, bring it to me. Vayan echod mehane, v'havi yosem is actually an interesting word grammatically. Okay. Vayan echod mehane arim. So one of the youths answers Shaul. Vayomer, and he said, Hinera isi bein liyishai beis halachmi. I know of a son of Yishai in Beit Lechem. Remember, Yishai is very well known. So he says, a son of Yishai. Yodea Nagein. He knows how to play music. V'gibor Chayil. He is somebody who is also a person who is mighty. Chayil, we've talked about in other contexts, a person of substance. Chayo can mean a lot of different things. The only thing I know here is that it does not mean strength, because the next words are v'ish milchama. He's a man of war. So you wouldn't need to say gibor chayo and ish milchama. That would be redundant. But he is also a warrior. Univon davar. Nivon davar is also a hard term to translate. You could render it as he understands things. You could render it as he speaks with understanding, like Nivon Diber. He can speak with comprehension. The Ishtawar. Ah, he's good looking. Don't forget good looking. No one said Admoni. Vashem Imo. And God is with him. Nice set of qualifications here for him. Vaishlach Shaul Malachim El Yishai. So Shaul sends messengers to Yishai. Vayomer, and he said, Shilcha Eli es David bin Chasher Batzon, send me your son David, the one who's out with the sheep. Right? Because again, that's how he's known. Vayikach Yishai Chamor Lechem, Vinod Yayin, Ugdi Izim Echad. So Yishai takes bread, wine, and a young goat. Vayishlach biyad David b'Noel Shaul, and he sent them as a gift with David for Shaul. I'm going to come back to what the gift was. We're going to come back to all of this. Right now, we're just learning the psukim. Vayavo David al Shaul vayamod lefanav. David comes to Shaul, stands before him. Vayehavehu me'od, and Shaul loved him a great deal. Vayilo no sei kelim, and he became a bearer of vessels of some kind, tools, implements of some kind. We'll talk a little bit about what that might have been. But Shaul likes him and appoints him to a position while he's there. And Vayishlach Shaul al Yishai lemor, and Shaul sends a message to Yishai. Yamod na David lefanai. Let David stand before me, please. Ki matzachein be'enai. I like this one. He says, he's a keeper. I'd like to keep David. And sure enough, he did. Because whenever this Ruach Elokim was upon Shaul, and it's not a positive Ruach Elokim, David played this kinor, it gave some space for Shaul. They gave him some relief. The Tovlo, and it was good for him. The Sarameh Alav Ruach Hara'ah, and at that point, the bad Ruach left him. That is the end of our perek. Questions. So there's a question in the chat, how close are Shaul and David geographically? And the answer is not far from each other. Remember that Yehuda and Binyamin are right next to each other. The Beis HaMikdash is actually in a portion that is either abutting both of them and not owned by either one, or shared between Yehuda and Binyamin. It's not clear. But but either way, Yehuda and Binyamin share a border. So they're not that far from each other. Agnes, you had a question?
Yeah. So you said that Yishai was well known, but how did this Na'ar know about David if he was like held in the background and not brought forward? How did he know about that? How did he even know how to play music, David? And how did he know that you had to play music?
Yeah, how does Shaul's Nar know David? Where did that come from? He's such, you know, he hangs out with the sheep. Why would anybody know David? I mean, when Shmuel came to him, Shmuel said, is there anybody else? And they bring out David. It's not like Shmuel knew who he was. I'm going to take two notes that are in the chat, even though I prefer not to. So just in general, we'll discuss things verbally, but I'll just note it. Why does it say Ruach Elohim was on him? So that's the negative for Shaul. It's describing how we talked about last week when he's having trouble. Then that's when he feels the absence of the positive Ruach from Hashem. Diane notes the focus on David's appearance. We focus on a bunch of traits, but appearance is indeed one of them. This is true. I saw a bunch of hands. Sandy, and then Janine, and then Jeanette. And Alina also. Sandy.
So we don't hear the name David in the context of Shaul yet. In other words, the Na'ar says there's a young son of Jesse, of Ishai, and then he says to him, send me David, your son who is with the sheep. And it's almost like extra information he's gained that we're not aware of, and I'm just curious
right.
as to why.
Right. I mean, my assumption would be that the... That there is more dialogue going on than just the words that are brought for us. There is a classic idea from one of the Hasidic Rebbeim that all the words you find in Tanakh are all the words these people spoke. Meaning, all you get, all the words that Shaul ever spoke are the words that appear here in Tanakh. But that's a very, very hard idea to sustain. That can't be meant literally. It doesn't fit. So yes, he's mentioning there is a son. Shaul finds out it's David, and Shaul goes back with, uses that information. Okay, Janine.
Well, if Shaul is feeling melancholy because he's losing his kingdom, it sounds like this is a threat, like some of the things that he's a Giborah. It's not just that he's good looking. Hashem Imo, this sounds threatening rather than soothing. He just wanted someone to play, and he's not just saying he's a wonderful player, even an understanding person. He says things that sound threatening to me.
Right. So
threatening to show.
Right. So we're going to see that in a source. We're going to see the Gemara indicate that, in fact, it is presented as a threat. But I have to wonder, this whole business of what we're reading into the dynamic in Shaul and David, how much of this would Shaul have actually anticipated? Meaning, you have this kid, Shepherd, right, who's being brought to you. Are you going to really think of him as a threat? You know, it's sort of like the Medrashim about Moshe and Paro. You know, the baby boy is found in the river, and Paro thinks, well, maybe this is the one they're talking about who's going to be the next king. Would there really have been a thought that... that David should be a threat? The Gemara is going to say yes.
Well, it says, Kiborchai, why do you need a strong man or a good-looking? You could say understanding, you know, he'll know how to deal with you. But Hashem Imo, that's really a shtuch.
Yeah. No, it is true. All right. Jeanette, Alina, Ora, and Leona.
I had a similar thought to Janine, but not... I didn't think of it as a threat. It just seems like oversell. Like, here Shaul is asking for somebody to play. All you need to know is this guy is a good musician.
Right, so that's a major question.
Where did all the rest come from? It just seems oversell and odd.
Right, and that's a major question we have to address here, is why in the world do you need somebody with all of these traits? Yes, for a good musician, give me a good musician. Why do you need him also to be a warrior? And he speaks well. And by the way, he's on the cover of GQ. What is all of this about? Alina.
You guys covered what I was going to say.
Okay. Ora, and then Leona.
Similar to what Jeanette said, but even extra, you've got, he asked for they offered a musician. They're giving him an example of every other job description under the sun, and then he becomes an arms bearer, an arms carrier. Like, what is...
Right.
Where are we?
Assuming it really is an arms carrier, which we have to talk about, it would be very strange.
But why is that his job? Like, he's a musician,
yeah.
Let him be the musician.
Right, right. And the answer could be budget cuts, but yeah, we do have to figure this out. It's true, Leona.
All right.
I see Ethie also. Yeah.
You mentioned before all the things that are not sin.
and give a chance for all of the horseshoes to try and figure out what's really behind the scenes here. But we don't know what Shmuel said to David or to Yishai, if it was just the two of them, when he was anointed. We don't know if he said, this is not going to happen immediately, this is going to take some time, this will become effective at such and such a date. We don't know what David was told about when he ascends to the throne. In any case, I find personally it's very awkward for David to accept this challenge to play for the man that he knows he's going to succeed at some time in the future. What was going through his head when he agreed to do this quite willingly, it seems, to actually perform for the very man he is going to take the throne from.
Yeah.
At some point.
It's really striking. I think you're making an excellent point. They, it was noted in the chat, Eileen noted, this looks like it's an apprenticeship of sorts. Maybe David looks at it as like experience here. I get to hang out in the court. But I think your point, Leon, is an excellent point. What does David make of all of this? Unless the answer is, one of the hallmarks of David, which we're going to see over and over and over again, is that he believes that whatever's happening to him is from Hashem. Good, bad, that's all of Sefer Tehillim. Everything that's happening to David is Hashem is doing this. And I wonder if he doesn't look at this and say, well, I guess this is the process now. I was anointed, and now I'm going to go hang out in the palace, apprenticeship or not. You're right. It's very interesting to think about what this all looks like to David. Etty, you were going to say?
Yeah.
I see you, Ruth.
First of all, the king gives you a request. You can't very well refuse it.
True. Who said refuse, though? It's interesting to wonder what he's thinking.
He has to go because the king asked for him.
That's true. Although, we're going to come back with a nuance on that. Probably not today, depending on how much more time we take on the questions, but we'll see.
When they're describing him as good looking, well, he's a performer. Like in Hollywood, most actors are good looking. So it's pleasant to see somebody good looking play for you.
It's really interesting that you say that. You're reminding me of a comment by Abarbanel, and I don't remember anymore where I saw it. It was either Abarbanel or Ralbag commented that actually musicians are often unattractive. And it was this whole theory of how that works. It's Abarbanel or Ralbag, but I don't remember where. I have to look it up. But the paradigm of the ugly musician. I have to find where I saw that. It's not that long ago that I saw it. I don't remember where. Okay. And, sorry?
The other thing I wanted to say is of him being Nosei Kelim.
Yeah.
It says that Shaul really liked him, so he wanted to keep him close, so not only play for him, and also do other things for
you. That's why he's going to have him do something else. Could be. All right, I see Ruth, and then I'm going to go on, because there's a lot here, and we haven't even hit all the questions you could ask. Ruth.
I was going to make the same point as Ed, it's okay.
Okay. All right. So, a few things, first of all. I think I want to group our questions and our discussion based on what we're talking about, based on the subject. So, first of all, I have language and story questions here. Who was it who spoke up about David? How is that person identified here? Achad HaNa'arim. One of the youths, as they say. Right? Sorry? Definitely not Yonatan, because he wouldn't have been one of the Na'arim. He's Yonatan. He's got a name. It's very strange, especially because the people who were in the court who Shaul spoke to beforehand were Avadav. So this person is not an Eved, whoever he is. And he's worthy of being singled out. So keep that idea in mind. This is an important figure. I don't know who he is yet. I do, because I prepared the source sheet. But that's number one. Number two, What is the role of this gift that is being brought? Why do we make a point of this? It reminds me of another gift. It reminds me of the gift that Shaul wants to bring when he goes to see Shmuel, and he has nothing to give him as a gift. You know, what's the what exactly is the nature of this gift? It's another question about the language here in the story. The Nosei Kelim, I think, is also an interesting question. What is this job that he gets? Question here also regarding Shaul's state of mind. Why would music solve the problem of Ruach Ra'ah? Sure, play some music for him. If you take his problem as purely psychological, so I understand. I get it. If it's just psychological, he's in a bad mood, music puts him in a better mood. But if his problem is Ruach Elohim Ra'ah, if the problem is something from Hashem, why should music take care of that? I want to come back to that. It's just a question I'm planting. I'm not looking for answers right now. Also, the other questions are basically subsumed under what people asked already. I think that basically covers it. So, in terms of understanding the basic story, Achad HaNe'arim is fascinating, and it leads us in a direction here that I think is significant. Now, I got a message here that my audio is cutting in and out, so just take a second. I'm going to just run through the audio tests. That usually works. Okay, you hear me better now?
Wasn't bad before.
Oh, wasn't bad before for you. Okay, great. So
it was cutting out a little bit. I thought okay. Maybe because so many people aren't muted.
Right. No, that doesn't do it. It's my computer.
No,
so here we're going to get to Hannah.
Yeshua ben Nun is also described as Na'am.
Yes.
By Moshe, so it's a high level.
Oh, it can be. Meaning, Nar gets used for all sorts of people. Nar is Yosef. Nar is Yoshua. Nar is Eliezer. Yeah, sorry.
No, I said Eliezer.
Okay. Nar, I understand Nar to mean somebody who is energetic, somebody who moves, somebody who does. But in terms of this Achad HaNe'arim here, the Gemara is going to do something fascinating and introduce us to somebody we mentioned briefly once before, but now he deserves a little more discussion. Take a look at source number one on your sheet, please. And this is especially going to appeal to those who thought that whoever is praising David is making Shaul jealous. Gemara says, Sanhedrin Tzadigim Alamed Beis, Kol ha-pasuk hazeh lo amaro do'eg, ela b'lashon hara. This whole pasuk was said by do'eg only as lashon hara, as harmful speech. Who is do'eg? Do'eg is credited by the Chachamim as being the head of the Sanhedrin. He's the head of the Sanhedrin. We will meet do'eg for the first time explicitly in the book, in chapter 21, when he's the one who sees David in Nov, he sees the Kohen in Nov give David a weapon and food, he goes back and tells Shaul about it, and Doeg ends up massacring the city of Nov. That's who Doeg is. So according to the Gemara, that's not Doeg's first appearance in the story. As a matter of fact, according to the Medrash, this is actually his second appearance right here. I'm jumping for a moment down to source number two. I mentioned this Medrash back when we learned about the war with Amalek. Do you remember how Shaul said the nation was the one that wanted me to spare the animals? So look at the Medrash in source number two. Vayachmol Shaul veha'am. Shaul and the nation spared Agag and the sheep. Bar Kapara Omar. Bar Kapara said, Zedoeg. The nation is Doeg. Shakul Kineged Kol Yisrael. He's called the nation because, as the head of the Sanhedrin, he is the equal of all Israel. That's a really interesting thing. So Doeg was the one who pressured Shaul to spare the animals. And Doeg is the one who nominates David as musician as Lashon Hara. Now let's go back to source number one and see what you mean when you say this is Lashon Hara. Not yet, Eti. I want to go through the Gemara first, okay? The Yodea Nagin, he knows how to play, doesn't mean playing music. Sheyodea Lishael, he or Lishal probably is the intent. He knows how to ask questions in learning. Gibor, he's mighty. Sheyodea Lahashiv, he knows how to answer. Ish Milchama, a warrior, Sheyodea Lisav Litan B'Milchamta Shel Torah. He knows how to debate in the war of Torah. V'Navon Davar, he understands, Shemevin Davar Mitoch Davar, he understands one thing from another. Ish Toar, a man of appearance, Shemar'eh Panim B'Halacha, he can display the explanation for his positions in Halacha, such that people understand why he says what he says and they accept it. V'Hashem Imo, and God is with him, Shehalacha Kemoso B'Chol Makom. The law follows him in every debate. Doeg plays up David as a Talmud Chacham. This is very striking. Now, look at Shaul's reaction. Bechulu Amar Lehu Yehonasan Bini Kamohu. With each of these traits, Shaul said, yeah, my son's like that also. Kevin Da Amar Le Vashem Imo. But then he said, God is with him. Milsa Dibidide Nami Lo Havabe. Even Shaul didn't have that. Cholash Daite Ve'ikni Abe. At that point, he got upset and he became jealous. Remember, we saw that pasuk, that once things went bad with Shaul, well, even before that, actually, wherever he turned, Yarshia, he did bad. I didn't want to translate Yarshia here. We had a whole discussion about what Yarshia meant back when we saw the pasuk. And with David, we have a pasuk that says, wherever he turns, he succeeds. The truth of the matter is that that pasuk about wherever he turns, he succeeds isn't actually a pasuk. It's a longer discussion. I'm not going into that right now. I may come back to that at a later date. But the point is that this story is doing some fascinating things. Painting this as Doeg, and it's about learning Torah, and making Shaul jealous of David. Whoa, is there a lot going on here. But just to finish the Gemara first. Minalan de Doeg Hava. How do we know this is Doeg? Take a few steps back. Where did that come from? Susan is shaking her head like, yeah. Why didn't we ask that question in the beginning? Ksiv Hacha, because here it says, Vayan Echad Mehane Arim. One of the youths, Echad Mehane Arim. You didn't need to specify Echad. Obviously it was Echad. You could have said Vayan Nar. What do you mean Echad Mehane Arim? Miyuchad Shebene Arim. The special one of the youths. Uchsiv Hasam. And in the story in the city of Nov, it's going to say, Visham Ishmael Avdei Shaul Bayamaun et Sarlifne Hashem, that there was one of Shaul's servants, there he's called a servant, there in Nov, and his name was Doeg Abir Haroim, the mightiest of Shaul's shepherds. So the mightiest of the shepherds, he is a special person. He is Miyuchad. So here it's a special youth. There, Doeg is identified as being special, therefore, it must be that this is Doeg. Oh boy, we got a lot to talk about. I'm not going to ask for general reactions to this, because we have, Knight and I are 27 people on this chat right now, and we'll get 27 different reactions, and some people more than once. So, I'm not doing that. I want to make certain points, some of which I think people here are already going to make as well. Number one is you're setting up Shaul for a bad relationship with David. Right? You're starting the jealousy here. So this is good. Not good in terms of Shaul and David, but good in the sense that what you're trying to do is explain how did things go bad. Here he loves David. So, but there's a root here. There's jealousy already starting. That's number one. Number two, by introducing the idea that the praise for David is about his Torah, and by retranslating Yodea Nagein, he knows how to play music, into he knows how to learn, you're addressing the question of why should music be successful in helping Shaul out of a spiritual funk.
Absolutely.
Right? You're saying is, hang on, Diane. The idea is that it's a spiritual cure for a spiritual problem. It's not about music. It's about Torah. That's a view that the Gemara is giving you. We have more to say about what was working. I'm not there yet. But this is one possible explanation of, to which you then have to ask, then why did you use music as your conversation? Why didn't you just say he's there to learn Torah with him? It's a chavrusa. Why did you need to tell me all about music? I get that problem. But that's a second point. I see notes in the chat, so I'm going to turn to those for a moment. If Shaul was jealous, why did he agree for David to come to his court? And the answer may well be he's not jealous until he sees it in person. That could be an answer. Or it could be Doeg is planting a seed that's going to grow over time. That would be another way to explain it. Is Doeg deliberately doing this just like he advised him on Agag deliberately to get him in trouble? Does Doeg not like Shaul? So I'm going to come back to that in a moment, because I think it's a very interesting point. But first, I want to come back to how we know it's Doeg. You can't seriously tell me the only piece of evidence that you have is it's one of the youths, that means it's a special one, and Doeg is special, ergo this is Doeg. That's not our only piece of evidence. When we go forward to the story of Nov, we find that Doeg is a person of standing. And you'll see. Let's do it. Let's look forward. Shmuel Aleph, Perek Chaf Aleph, chapter 21, sentence 8.
But didn't we have Doeg already?
No, never in person in the Torah, in the text. Only the Medrash that we mentioned about him with Amalek. That's it. You have no other mention of him in the text. So if you go to sentence 21, to chapter 21, sentence 8, that's the sentence that we already quoted in the Gemara about how he is Abir Haroim, the mightiest of the shepherds. Now the Gemara that's going to say that Doeg is the head of the high court, right, is taking head of the shepherds, shepherd not literal, but shepherd, you know, teacher of Torah, that type of thing. That's number one. Number two, chapter 22, sentence 9. This is when Shaul, is when, I'm sorry, when the news has been reported. Right? Look at the position of Doeg. This is before the destruction of Nov. Vayan Doeg ha'adomi. Doeg responded, Vehu nitzav al avdei Shaul. He was now the one who oversaw the servants of Shaul. So he was, number one, Abir Haroim. Now, number two, he is in charge of avdei Shaul. And then, jump to sentence 17 in chapter 22. And lo and behold, the people who are serving Shaul do not want to carry out the massacre of Nov. And so the king says to Doeg, I want you to be the one to do it. And Doeg is the one who carries it out. Doeg is somebody of standing. But not only that. David knew that Doeg was somebody of standing. Susan, what's confusing you? You're on mute.
I don't see his name.
In where?
I see, and the king said to the footman.
Yeah, keep on reading into sentence 18.
Oh, you can say 18.
Yeah, whatever.
And the king said to Doeg, so...
Now, go to, still in the same chapter, sentence 22. When David finds out what happened to Nov, look at what he says. Vayomer David le'Evyasar. David says to Evyasar, Evyasar is the survivor of Nov. So he tells David about what happened. David says to Avyasar, Yadati bayom ha'u ki sham doeg ha'adomi ki haged yagid l'Shaul. I knew it. I knew Doeg was there, which means David knew that Doeg was somebody of standing.
He's also an Edomite.
I'm going to come back to the Edom thing. We're not there yet. That's not going to be today. You are correct that it says he's from Edom. We have to talk about that. But the point is that out of all of this, and the point that I'm trying to make, is that Doeg is somebody of standing. We should have seen him beforehand in the book. He should have showed up before that story of Nov. Where has he been? The Medrash is looking at it and saying, he was here. He's right here. He's the one who spoke up in this story. But now I come... I'm sorry?
We see that he's a troublemaker.
He is a troublemaker. But here I take you to an idea that I had that I think is correct. Take a look at source number 3. This is a loaded Gemara, which you can go through and completely miss. But we're not going to miss it. We're going to go through it and understand it. Flas mea boi bo doeg v'achitofel b'migdal ha-poreach ba'avir. I'm going to first explain the phrase migdal ha-poreach ba'avir. You can take it in different directions. The commentators do. I'm taking the most simple explanation, which is a cabinet that's open to the air. And it's talking about issues of purity and impurity. The question is the law of Ohel. If there's a dead body under a roof of some kind, tumah spreads throughout that space. If there's a dead body that is in a cabinet of some kind, tumah can spread in certain ways, depending on overhangs of it, non-overhangs of it. And so they're talking about a cabinet that's open to the air. It's a fairly esoteric, at least for us, area of law. I'm not sure it would have been esoteric for them, because they dealt with purity and impurity. But the point is, Doeg and Achitofel asked 300 questions about this one area of law. What is it trying to tell me when it says that? What's the message?
Is it like Esav asking about whether salt is tanana? It's belaboring a point to show how wise you are?
Oh, that's interesting. I admit I did not think of it that way. I just thought it's saying, look how wise he is. You know, look at that. This is a very smart and learned person. He's able to offer sage counsel if he can ask all these questions. But
maybe they're disputing it.
I'm sorry?
Maybe they're making it as a dispute, as an argument against the...
Maybe. But there's something else going on in this line. Short line. But those who know Tanakh will pick up on this.
Which line are we talking about?
Source number 3, the Gemara in Chagiga.
No,
that would be clever, though. Doeg and Achitofel. Who is Achitofel?
Who's Achitofel?
So, Arlena, you're on mute.
David's advisor.
David's advisor, correct. Sandy, thanks for the note. David's advisor, but not just that, Hannah.
He's giving good advice against David.
They both give bad advice.
Is he a nephew or something?
He is a relative. He's in the family, but...
They both gave bad advice to their king.
Achitofel was the...
He helped with the rebellion again.
Correct. Achitofel was the one who went over to Avshalom.
Betrayed.
He was a traitor.
Yes. By grouping together Doeg and Achitofel, you're getting a warning here. They're two people who are very, very smart. We're going to hear much later in Shmuel that the advice of Achitofel is considered like the advice of Hashem. That's literally the comparison that the text is going to make. That's why David is afraid when Achitophel goes over to support Avshalom. He says, now I'm really in trouble. And he's only undermined because somebody else comes along and tells Avshalom what Avshalom wants to hear and undermines the advice that Achitophel gave. If Avshalom had listened to Achitophel, it would have changed history. The point here is, at least my point here is, that by grouping together Doeg and Achitophel, it's trying to say, yes, Doeg is very smart, number one. Number two, Doeg is very dangerous. He's not somebody with good motivations. Whether it's like, you know, Esav and the salt, I can't speak to. But he is a very dangerous man with very dangerous motivations. You don't want to be involved with him. And here's my key point in all of this about Doeg. I feel like we're positioning Doeg as Shaul's Yetzer Hara. I feel like we're positioning Doeg as Shaul's Yetzer Hara. Because I think we have a problem. Shaul was wonderful. Right? When we first started learning about Shaul, he was wonderful. He was humble. He was righteous. He had all of the great character traits, all the great physical traits. He didn't want the throne. Shaul's great. How in the world did his reign become such a disaster? What happened? And the answer may be it wasn't because of Shaul. The answer may be it happened because of Doeg.
Nice, but it's still his fault.
Hey, look, you're always going to get blamed. Ein shliach l'dvar avera. You can't say that I was, you know, acting on behalf of somebody else. It doesn't work. Nonetheless, you want to know, with the Karbanos, it's his own error. No one else takes the blame for that. But now, with Amalek, right, sparing the animals, oh, that was Doeg. Right? And jealous of David, that was Doeg. Wiping out Nov, yeah, that was Doeg. It's Doeg is the architect of Shaul's demise. That is, I think, what we're seeing here is that Doeg is positioned as Shaul's Yetzer Hara, bringing him down. What does he want? Ricky asks in the chat. I don't know. I see hands, but it's 2:30, so I'm going to ask everybody to keep in mind all of their questions and comments, or you can email them to me. If you want to email them to me, and we'll address it by email, that works as well. But if you want to hold it till next week, that works too. I'm going to send out, God willing, a link to that Parsha Shir that I gave last night, so you could hear the full idea about the Zakenim and Moshe's Ruach. But you got the summary already now. Thank you so much. I wish you a good Shabbos.
Bye-bye. Good Shabbos. Bye-bye.